Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the 99% insurrection that began with the Occupy Wall Street movement and has now gone global with massive street protests in Spain and violent clashes in Italy. Stephanie Griffiths-Jones, the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University, joins us from the European banking haven Luxembourg. Then we'll get a point-by-point rebuttal of the plausibility of the plot involving an Iranian-American used car salesman and a Mexican drug cartel hitman who, according to U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, planned to assassinate the Saudi ambassador at his favorite Georgetown restaurant. Rasul Nafisi, who has studied the Pasdaran, the guardian of revolution in Iran, joins us to discuss the growing confrontation between Saudi Arabia and Iran that could lead to a Sunni-Shia confrontation in the Middle East. Then finally, we will look into the latest deployment of U.S. troops to a war zone, this time in Africa, where U.S. military advisors are joining with the Ugandan military to eliminate the Lord's Resistance Army, a murderous cult operating on the border with the Congo. John Prendergast, the co-founder of the Enough Project, an initiative to end genocide and crimes against humanity, joins us. He was Director of African Affairs on the National Security Council in the Clinton administration. And joining us now is economist Stephanie Griffiths-Jones, who is currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She's the co-editor with Joseph Stiglitz of Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephanie Griffiths-Jones.
Welcome, Ian. Thank you, Ian, for your warm welcome.
And you're in the European banking haven, Luxembourg. As far as the people on the streets are concerned, demonstrating all around the world, I guess you're in the belly of the beast, right?
That's right. But I'm not visiting the private banks. I'm visiting a public bank called the European Investment Bank, which actually does a lot of good things. We need more public banking because private banking has served us so badly. They lend 70 billion euros a year to SMEs, to small and medium companies, for big infrastructure projects. And this is, I think, a big part of the solution.
Well, in terms of the demonstrations, Stephanie, you were in Ireland yesterday where there were demonstrations? There were large demonstrations in London. Fairly violent ones in Italy, huge demonstrations in Spain, demonstrations in Hong Kong, Taiwan, New Zealand, Australia, all around the world. So what did you witness?
Well, I saw quite a considerable demonstration in Ireland. They have a lot to demonstrate about in Ireland. Their economy has stalled. A lot of people have lost their houses. Wages have fallen. It's not as bad as Greece, but it's pretty bad. I've been recently also in Spain, where youth unemployment is 44%. So out of 100 young people, 44 do not have a job. So it's very understandable that all these people are protesting against a system that doesn't deliver, that doesn't work for them.
So what is the answer? I mean, jobs, jobs, jobs will be the mantra in 2012 in the American election. I think you could safely predict that. What's on the table in Europe about if you've got 44 out of 100 out of work in Spain, young people? That's a jobs crisis. Is there anything being done to even approach that crisis? And I guess the second question is there something beyond the traditional understanding of employment and economics going on here? In other words, are jobs becoming obsolete?
Well, I think these are really profound questions. What the Europeans are doing, and I think what the Republicans would like to do in the United States, is austerity. And, of course, that, especially if it's done at the same time in different countries, is completely counterproductive because the private sector doesn't want to invest, is afraid to invest, and if the public sector invests less because the government cuts, then the situation will continue to deteriorate. And because these countries trade with each other, it will multiply internationally. The only countries that are growing, even though they're slowing down now, are the developing countries. And the reason is, the main reason, is that they have had the courage to increase government spending, to increase public banks lending, where they have public banks, like in India, in Brazil, in China. And therefore, their economies are still growing. And so that is obviously showing us the way, because they are doing what Roosevelt did in the New Deal in the 1930s, which is that you have to spend your way out of a recession. Obviously, you have to be careful about levels of debt, which are too high in the United States and in Europe as a result of the big mistakes that the private banks did. But we shouldn't punish poor people and young people for the sins, for the mistakes of the banks.
So Stephanie Griffith-Jones, again, currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She's the co-editor with Joseph Stiglitz of Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. I understand that you're talking about these austerity programs being disastrous and counterproductive in this global recession. I believe that the British have come to that conclusion, haven't they?
Yes. I mean, we have a government in the UK which is actually cutting spending very quickly at a time when there is no pressure from the financial markets on the UK. So there are two problems. One is that they're cutting because I think they want to reduce the size of government. They have a sort of ideological commitment to that. Secondly, they are not doing what they should do, which is increase taxes on the very rich, increase taxes on the financial sector. Progressive people are now talking about a tax on financial transactions, the old Tobin idea, and Europe has a lot of support. So why not tax the rich and use that money to increase investment, for example, in the green economy? We have such big needs in Europe, in the United States, and why are we not using the resources that we have, that governments can raise, that pension funds and insurance companies have, to invest in productive activity?
Well, given that it's counterintuitive, and I think by all economic measures, to have austerity at a time when you need to stimulate moribund economies, and I understand that the British statistics are fairly clear that you're adding unemployment to unemployment, and then your revenues go down, and then as long as you don't tax the rich, your tax base is drying up. I mean, it's all fairly logical. But my understanding, though, is that if the Cameron government doesn't get it, doesn't the economic community and the press and everybody else in England see the evidence? It's pretty manifest, isn't it?
I think there's an increasing agreement amongst sort of economists that there's a debate, but there's a lot of agreement that the government, the British government plan is not working, and that their stubbornness in not pursuing a sort of plan B is going to continue damaging the economy. And you see, what is important is that the UK could reduce the deficit at a far slower pace. Equally, the German government could facilitate an increase of real wages and could also have a somewhat larger budget deficit. And that the fact that the UK and Germany would expand their economies more, would grow more, Germany is actually growing, but if they grew more, this would help get the poorer peripheral countries, the Portugal, the Greece, the Ireland, out of this terrible recession. And secondly, the austerity which they are imposing on these countries, like Greece particularly, is actually destroying the fabric of the society, is making them cut spending dramatically, is making them privatize important public assets. and is pursuing a recipe that we have seen before in the developing countries didn't work at all. It led to lost decades to growth, for example, in Latin America in the 80s. And this terrible strategy is now being imposed in Europe, and there are long fears that it could lead to the same bad results.
So when you talk about ideologues, in the case of Cameron and the Conservatives introducing this austerity in the face of economic evidence to the contrary, that's certainly rings true of the Republicans here in the United States. And as you know, Stephanie Griffith Jones, the president, offered up a jobs bill, which the Republicans in the Senate filibustered, so it didn't even get off first base. Now that, of course, has a political component, where the president is positioning himself for the 2012 election as the adult in the room, and I'm the guy that tried to solve the jobs problems, and these people are obstructing me. Already, I believe the Republicans are diving in the poll. It's quite precipitous, the drop of support for Republicans. So this strategy may well work. But, you know, well, let's talk about the human side of it. That's what these kids are in the streets about here in New York, in Los Angeles, all across the country, and then now all across the world. So let's talk about that a little bit. You know, where are the jobs going to come from? And is this political activism the only way to turn this around?
First of all, I think the kids that are on the streets are totally right, because they are growing up in a world which is dysfunctional. We have an economy that isn't able to provide them with jobs. And I think President Obama was correct in the program that he launched. And I think the Republicans are denying this program. They're blocking it. Only for narrow political gain, because they think if Obama cannot increase job creation, then that they will benefit. So they don't really seem to care about the United States. They don't seem to care at all about young people. They don't seem to care at all about jobs. And they pursue failed economic ideologies. And I think what needs to be done, for example, in the United States, I think, you need to invest more in your infrastructure, because the infrastructure doesn't correspond to that of the largest economy in the world. You have bad roads. You need to green your infrastructure. And there is now a proposal, a bit small, about creating a public-private infrastructure fund. This is an excellent idea that's coming out of the administration, and is actually quite similar in some ways to what this European Investment Bank, where I'm speaking tomorrow, is doing. Massive infrastructure across Europe. To try and revive the economy. So this is the kind of things that have to be done. There has to be a vision, like there was a vision in the time of Roosevelt and the New Deal in the 30s, which helped pull out the United States from this terrible recession. We do not want to repeat the mistakes of the 30s. And somehow, slowly, we're going down this slippery slope. We started okay. The first response to the crisis were stimulus across the world. And now, because of the pressure from the financial markets, who don't want to fund the debts which have been incurred because of them, because countries like Ireland rescued their banks, and now the government has this massive debt, which is due to the fact that it rescued all the bank bondholders. And now the markets don't want to fund this Irish debt. So we have this paradox. The government lend a helping hand to the private banks, but the private banks do not then support the government.
So the irresponsible lenders don't get punished, only irresponsible borrowers get punished.
Exactly. It's the poor people who have the subprime mortgages. It's the small and medium companies that can't get credit. They are the ones that get punished. And the people who made the big mistakes, who were the irresponsible predatory lenders, they continue to get their bonuses, even in banks that have had to be taken over. In the UK, for example, Royal Bank of Scotland is more than 80% owned by us, the taxpayers. And yet you see these bankers still getting their massive bonuses. And perhaps even worse, they're not doing their job. They're not lending to small companies. They're not investing in new projects. So they're completely dysfunctional. I think it was Keynes who said that we have to turn the financial sector from being a bad master to being a good servant of the real economy. Because that's what the financial sector should be doing. It should be financing the real economy. It's a means to an end. It's not a money-making machine for greedy bankers. It shouldn't. It is, but it shouldn't be.
Well, just in closing, Stephanie Griffith-Jones, what, given 44 out of 100 young Spaniards are out of work and their prospects aren't good, what can be done creatively to rethink employment? Because clearly capital has been the beneficiary of improved productivity over the last few decades, and labor has lost out.
I think it's very difficult in the crisis. Part of the solution is next time round, don't have a crisis. Regulate the financial system. Do not allow these imbalances to happen. Have responsible policies. But in the crisis, you have to continue to keep up aggregate demand, because even the private sector, the private investors, will not go in to invest if there isn't enough aggregate demand. And then you can do creative things. You can use, for example, public banks, as the Germans do. The Germans actually have very good public banking. The Brazilians do. And you could expand that, and you could invest, obviously, in good projects, and you could generate jobs. And then when the private sector will see that, they will come in behind it because they will see that they're profitable opportunities and you will have new entrepreneurs. So you have to give... There are such big needs. We have to meet the challenges, for example, of climate change. So we have to, for example, in Europe, in the United States, all over the world, we have to invest in renewable energy. That requires massive resources that will generate a lot of jobs, and that will help save the planet, protect the planet. And so it's very, very clear that we have to find the financial mechanisms to channel savings from those who have them to people who want to invest. And if the private banks cannot do it, we have to rely more on public levers.
Like the bank that you started out telling us about.
Like the European Investment Bank, which, right, for example, increased its lending to small companies, mm-hmm, over 100%.
Well,
when the crisis started.
Well, I thank you.
While the private banks were diminishing their lending.
Sure. Well, I thank you for joining us, Stephanie. It's been a very interesting conversation.
Thank you very much, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with economist Stephanie Griffith-Jones, who's currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She is the co-editor with Joseph Stiglitz of Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back getting a point-by-point rebuttal of this alleged Iranian plot.
We walk the 40 blocks to the middle of the place we heard that everything would be. And there were barricades to keep us off the street, but the crowd kept pushing forward till they swallowed the police. Yeah, they went